Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us, whether you're listening live or listening to us later on. I'm so happy that you enjoy my show. And we're going to have some fun tonight. My guest tonight is Jiffy Reed, who is, among other things, a horse whisperer and a geek and a spiritual counselor. And she's very smart. And we have a lot of fun talking to each other. So we'll have fun today. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And there are so many places I could go with this tonight. Tomorrow's Friday the 13th. We could play with that. But I think one of the really fascinating things going on in the world right now is what's going on in physics, looking for the Higgs boson. Now, some of you may be saying, what? What's he talking about? Well, they call it the God particle. See, we don't really know why physical stuff has mass. They've got all this information about atomic particles and subatomic particles and, you know, things that are below the level of electrons and photons, quarks and all kinds of other things. But someone said there's got to be one thing, one bit of matter that creates mass, because they can't find what does that. So they've got that big particle accelerator at CERN in Switzerland, and they smash particles together and it creates other particles. Now, this stuff is so small that you can't actually see it with any technology that we have, but they can see the traces and the outcomes of what happens, and one of them gives a signature of this particular particle. And they've had that show up a couple of times. They're really excited about it. But they're dealing with one of the great questions of what is reality and how is it created. You know, quantum physics is really has changed all the things that we believe. We now know that everything is energy. Einstein said that 100 years ago. Everything is energy, and there's a whole lot of energy in every particle of matter. That's how you can make a big bang with a bomb. That's how you can do a whole bunch of things that we now do with an understanding that matter is compressed energy. They just don't know what exactly that means. So if you're doing an experiment and you look for energy, look for waves of energy at a particular frequency or however you're setting it up, you will find behavior that is wave-like and that you can test that way. If you look for, in your experiment, particles, you will find particles in exactly the same phenomenon. There are both waves and particles. So if you have light, it is both waves and a stream of photons. The thing is, you can't look for both. You can either look for waves or you can look for particles. And sometimes a stream of particles acts as if it's a wave and interferes, creates interference patterns the way waves do. There's all this stuff that they can get to happen consistently, but they don't know exactly why. What they do know is that if you try to measure it, if you have two streams of photons, for example, and you put a counting device on one of those streams, the whole thing behaves differently. Observation changes what's going on. And the way they talk about it is everything exists as waves of energy, as possibilities in this energetic realm, until somebody observes it, until somebody focuses on it, and until somebody puts their attention on that in a certain way. And then the term they use is collapsing the waveform. So you've got all these infinite possibilities, and somebody goes, how about this? And everything goes whoosh, and suddenly you have the physical world. And that's a pretty good way of looking at the biblical story of Genesis, you know. God said, let there be, and lo, there was. So consciousness, observing something, and then saying, oh, this is good, let's do something else. Let's focus on something else and create something more. So there's a parallel between the biblical stories and what every shaman and mystic has said through 9 or 10,000 years of recorded history about how the universe is formed, that everything is energy, that in effect, the physical world somehow comes into reality because of us and our thoughts. So, you know, everybody is trying to manifest things, doing affirmations, saying prayers, setting goals, all the things we do to change our experience of reality. All of that stuff in some way is that creation process. In some way, we are manipulating energetic reality to create physical reality. And maybe these guys in white coats off in Switzerland are going to come up with some even snazzier explanation, but it's still going to get down to the same thing. Reality isn't what we understand it to be, and we affect what this physical reality is. So in case you didn't have anything to think about in your spare time, that is today's metaphysical musing. And I am just delighted to have this evening's guest with us. Jiffy, are you there?
I am here. Hi.
Hi, this is Jiffy Reed. And I guess the first question everyone probably ever asks you is that your real name?
Oh, God, no, it's a nickname. My real name is Janet, but I'm, I think, a seventh in line Janet. It was a name that came down the female side. And by the way, I broke the tradition. My daughter is not named Janet. But when I was born, there were three Janets alive, so they had to have some way to distinguish me, and Jan was taken, and Jane was taken, and so I became Jiffy.
So it isn't related to 100th of a second or anything exotic
like
that?
It's not related to that, but as I grew up, my mother said, thank God she didn't turn out to be some slow, fat kid.
And that's extremely funny because you are anything but a slow fat kid.
I am anything but a slow fat kid. I've slowed down a little bit in recent years because of a accident I had off a horse. But other than that, no, I go pretty fast.
And if people look at pictures of her online on Facebook or on her website, she is typically on a horse or doing some other extreme sport. I think when we first met, you had fallen off a snowboard.
Oh, God, the snowboard accident. Yeah, that was a nice concussion that had me on the couch for about 2 weeks. And actually, no, it was a great accident because my son saw me. Not quite the way he was used to seeing me. He'd go off to school in the morning and say, you know, bye, Mom. I'd be like, oh, where are you going? Bye, honey. And so he's like, he's the best that you can get about wearing helmets. He is not going to have a head injury. He's seen what happens to people who do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard way to teach that lesson.
It is.
But just to round this out, you are a horsewoman. You've been working with horses in various ways. You're a trainer and you mm-hmm. teach people to ride, but you're also a horse whisperer. So tell us a little bit about that form of communication with horses.
Okay. Well, it started out as you know, not what a lot of people think of as a horse whisperer these days. I was the kid that I'm a second generation horsewoman. My mother was a really, really good horsewoman. And so I grew up around horses. I was on them from a very early age. I got my first horse when I was 7 years old, not a pony, but a full-fledged horse. And I was always the kid that when someone was having trouble with their pony when I was younger, or when someone was having trouble with a horse, I would be the one who would get on and try and straighten it out. So, and I was really good at it, and I was pretty gutsy, and I just loved the challenge. You know, I loved getting on a horse and sort of going, what's going on here? What can I do to, you know, try and figure this out? So that's how I got my start, and that's something that I did really most of my life that I really enjoyed doing. But the you know, horse whisper part, as people often think of it now, didn't come until later, except looking back on it, I realized it was always there. I just didn't know it was there. So I would get certain impressions from horses. I had a phrase. It occurs to me, you know, whenever I had that, it occurs to me thing. It was just like an image would pop into my mind of something that, you know, maybe this horse had experienced in the past. And then I'd ask, you know, the owner about it, and they would confirm it or say, you know, gosh, I keep having that same problem around the same issue too. And so that's when I started to go, I keep kind of hitting on things here. I wonder if there's something to it. So that was sort of part of my, awakening, if you will, that there's a lot more out there than meets the eye.
So tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing. Well, also about your history, because like so many people I know, you're not only a healer, but you're a heavy-duty computer geek.
Yeah, used to be. That was a long time ago. I went to college. I got my degree in psychology and computer science, and I was a psychology major. Kept hearing, you know, that computers were starting to really, you know, sort of become a thing in people's lives. I thought, you know, I better take a programming class. So I did, and it was really hard because I was used to psychology, which is a soft science, and you use a very different, you know, you use a brain in a very different way. And, you know, all I took was a basic programming course. I mean, it was about as simple and straightforward as it comes. But I had to be completely logical, and I'd never taken a class before where I had to sort of like, you know, sort of rein in my thinking and make things extraordinarily logical. And I found that I loved it. You know, when I sort of wrapped my head around that and started to do that, I went, oh my God, I'm actually a really logical thinker, and I really like to think logically. So I got my degree in computer science, worked as an IBM 370 assembler programmer for a while, which, you know, back then, it's basically working at the machine level, and you're really, I don't know. There's just, it's very precise. It's extraordinarily logical. I really loved it. But then gave it up to ride. I had an opportunity to compete at the highest level. I had the right horse. I had the right trainer. And so I gave notice at work and off I went.
It's kind of your version of running off to join the circus.
That's exactly what it was. And actually, when I ran off, my trainer was going down to North Carolina to train for the winter, and he said, why don't you come with me? And I was like, yeah, why don't I? So I did run off to join the circus. I found a sublet for my, a tenant for my apartment, and off I went.
Gotta love those things, which is my ongoing conversation on the show about walkabout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just leaving everything behind and going where you know you're supposed to go, not knowing how it's going to work out.
Oh, Lordy, yeah. Yep, not knowing how it's going to work out, but knowing that if you don't do it, just having this feeling like you're missing something, and you have no idea what you're missing, but you just know that that's where you have to go.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. And that's so different from the structured point of view of most people's lives, of having some linear plan. And what I always tell people is there are no straight lines in nature.
Nope.
Everything in nature is curved or curls back on itself. So anything that we come up with that's linear is not natural.
Right.
There are going to be curves, there are going to be twists, there are going to be turns, and beating yourself up about it. It's a nice game to play with yourself, but isn't going to get you anywhere.
No, and actually, you know, it's taking those curves and it's taking sometimes those dead ends and having to come around again that gives richness to life. I mean, that's where you really have the adventure. That's where you really get to sort of experience the fullness of it. We seem to have this misconception that, oh, you know, you've got to plan your life out, you've got to take all these steps, and then everything will be fine, and you'll make enough money, and you'll have a house, and you'll have a family, and then you'll be happy. But, you know, my life has taken such a different course, and that's where my life has been so interesting to me. I don't know if it's been interesting to anybody else. But that's, you know, that's where living really happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we've swapped stories in the past, and we've both done that kind of stuff, and we're still doing it.
Yep.
You know, the adventure continues. There's always another adventure. So you've got your geeky side, and you've got your very intuitive side. And actually, I'm just going to ask you this as a complete digression. I know when I start doing my work and I talk to people on the phone and I'm scanning what their problem is,
mm-hmm.
I can't do math anymore.
Huh. Interesting.
I basically have shifted my consciousness to that other way of being. And the simplest, you know, addition, I have to take a calculator out.
Actually, you know what? I know exactly what you're talking about. When I'm working with a horse, and actually this is really interesting, and I don't know if you probably know this anyway, but horses tend to be very right-brained, and logical thinking takes place in the left hemisphere. And so one of the gifts of horses for people who work with horses is that because they are right-brained animals, which is where intuition is, which is where you don't have that ability to sort of separate and delineate things. Everything is more kind of all one, and you see things in terms of movement of energy within the field, as opposed to the left brain that's going, oh, that's a horse, that's a form, and it goes like this. And, so anyway, horses are very right brain. We tend to take in the world very left brain, so we feel that, you know, we know what is what, and we can sort of hopefully control it, or so we think. And so, yeah, when I'm working with a horse, I get into that right brain, and it's a little bit hard sometimes to shift out, although I think nowadays, you know, I've done it enough that I can sort of go, zoop, zoop, you know, back and forth as I need to. But I totally get what you're saying. Sometimes when I've really been engaged in a session, either with a horse or with a person, it also happens when I've been engaged with a person, I have a hard time sort of coming out of it and articulating things to people. You know, if somebody needs something that requires a response from me, that's, you know, the kind of where I have to work from that left brain, it can be really hard. It sometimes takes me a little while. And the other thing is, I also find that I like living in that right brain thinking. You know, there's something really nice about being there, because it's the space where you're not in a world of judgment, and where you're in a world of, you know, just all that stuff that that pulls you out of the flow of things. And I know that sounds all really vague. I think I'm going into my right brain right now, which is why I'm having a hard time articulating this, but there you go.
Well, you know, one of the things that I love about interviewing people on the show is it all winds up being one way or another, this story, mm-hmm. you know, about right brain, left brain, intuition and logic. Got there in a way that I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. that's really the point. You know,
yeah.
It's that people who take a class and say, well, what do I need to do now?
Yeah.
So that I can be, you know, plug in whatever the term is, a healer, a shaman, a horse whisperer, whatever it is. And they really don't like the idea that it's going to take time. And you can't tell them what the process is exactly.
Yep. You know, one of my favorite books is Siddhartha, and I reread it like probably every 6 months, every year. And there's one passage in there where Siddhartha and his friend who accompanies him, they've been ascetics. They've been, you know, going out and begging for food on the streets and wearing rags and meditating all the time and praying all the time. And he just feels like he's not getting anywhere. And so the Buddha shows up. And he and his buddy go and listen to the Buddha, and they're all, you know, they're in awe. Oh my God, here's wisdom, here's teachings, here's stuff that makes sense. And his buddy decides to become a follower of the Buddha. And Siddhartha gets an audience with the Buddha, and he goes and he says to him, you know, you have such wonderful teachings, and you're obviously enlightened, and you've had this experience, and you have attained what I've attained. But I'm not going to follow you. And I'm not going to follow you because you didn't follow someone yourself. You came to where you are because you followed your path. And I have the feeling that if I follow you, I'm just going to become one of your followers. But I'm not going to be following my own path. And so he goes off and, you know, follows his own path and has the experiences he needs to have to then get to the realizations he needs to have to let go and to experience enlightenment. And there's this one passage in the book that goes on for about a page and a half that's so beautifully written about this, you know, him explaining why he's not going to follow the Buddha. And I sometimes pull that out and read it to people because it just so perfectly encapsulates what we're all called to do, on our own. You know, no one can do it for us. No one can tell us how to do it. We've got to go through the path. We've got to go through the work itself.
And we, in this culture, don't typically have the option of leaving everything behind and being an ascetic and, you know, begging on the street or living in a cave. That's really not how it's being done now. People are doing it in their daily life, trying to integrate it into whatever they do. In India, in the Hindu tradition, which is where the Buddha came from, typically somebody has their family and they have their children early. And by the time they're 50 or 55, they've taken care of their responsibilities as a householder. They're called a pogi. And at that point, if they want to pursue spiritual work, they go to be a yogi and they leave that behind. But they've already done that. And now they have a completely different life. What we're trying to do is be yogis and pogies at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the interesting thing I found from my own experience is that you don't need to change your life. When I was sort of on this journey and I knew where I wanted to go to, where I wanted to get to, but I was having trouble. I shouldn't say having trouble getting there, but I wasn't there yet. Let's put it that way. I kept thinking, what do I need to do? Do I need to go to an ashram in India? And that just felt like the totally wrong thing to do. Do I need to find a guru? And that felt like the totally wrong thing to do. What do I need to do? And I very quickly started to realize that everything that I needed to do was coming to me. That, you know, I was being led to the right teachings. The right people were crossing my path. And by the way, you know, it wasn't a guru who was crossing my path. It was just somebody who at that moment in time, or for a couple of days, or for a week, or for, you know, a few months, was just the right person to help me realize something I needed to realize, to remove yet another obstacle or yet another block. And so this is what people are starting to realize, is that wherever they are is exactly where they need to be in order to get to where they need in order to get to that place.
Right. And sometimes you need those dramatic periods in your life where you do something different, and have, if not a guru, somebody that knows more than you do, that you apprentice with.
Yep. So. Oh, absolutely. You know, it's different for every person. And this is one of the things that I love about the work that I do, is that people come to me and they're seeking, they're looking for something, and they don't know what it is, but they hear about enlightenment and they hear about all this stuff. And my job is to try and figure out where they are and where the next step is, and show them where the next step is. And it's always unique for every single person. And for some people, it is very appropriate for them to go out and find a mentor and to, you know, be with that mentor for years and really, you know, sort of get into a relationship with that person where they've got someone who's, you know, keeping track of them all the time. And then for other people, it's not the right thing. It's different for every person.
Right. Right. And you have to get to the point where you know what's going on. I love the people that show up, hasn't happened as much lately, and say, I want to do what you do. And I do some stuff that's pretty difficult and dark and dangerous. And I say, well, here's the thing. You got to start 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, if you come to me with all of that work, all that inner work with all of that experience, and you want another level, then I can teach you to do that safely. If you want to start from the very basics and do what I do, no, we can't do that overnight. I can't give you a workshop and show you what that is. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a little bit about it, but it's never going to be safe if you haven't done the work, if you haven't paid your dues. And we certainly are in a society that doesn't like paying dues. You know, people don't like the idea that you have to do something for 5 years or 10 years or 30 years to figure it out.
Yeah, and we're in a culture where, you know, if you want to become a software engineer, you go for 4 years and then you get a piece of paper that says that you can now be a software engineer. Or, you know, if you want to learn how to cook, well, then you go into take an adult ed class and you learn how to cook. And there's just so, by the time you figured out what you wanted, by the time you started to have your experiences, there was a lot of prep work that went into you before that.
Right. Right.
And so it's not just something you wake up one day and say, oh, I want to be this. You know, now I think I'm going to go find out how to be this.
Exactly. Well, we're coming up on the break. I want to make sure that we give people your contact information. What's your website?
JiffyReed.com. Really hard to remember.
And it's read like reading a book.
It's read like reading a book. And it's Jiffy like Jiffy Lube. You know, if you want to make jokes about that, that's fine. Believe me, I have heard them all. But
sure,
yeah, JiffyRead.com.
And I want to give people the call-in phone number if you would like to call in and join the conversation in chaos. It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. We'll start taking calls after the break, and we will be back in a few minutes here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Stay with us.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell. Don't I know it. Hey, it's Sassy. I think she's trying to tell us something. Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped? Where, Sassy? Where? What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people? Sassy, we don't have time! Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies? That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire? There is no fire! You're just messing with our heads? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
How do you wake up the entire African-American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends. And we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for stories that heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. And the engineers in the studio know that the Sassy commercials are pretty much my favorites. And it's always amusing when we have an animal communicator on and we have the Sassy commercials on because, you know, the kid's an animal communicator and the dog's a complete, you know, wise guy. So.
Oh, boy.
You're just messing with our heads. So let me give the phone number again. It's 248-809. 3474, 248-809-3474. Give us a call. Join in the craziness and fun. So talking about, you know, the thing I love about all these conversations is finding out how you got here. You know, who were you as a kid? How did the whole thing unfold for you? How'd you wind up doing what you're doing?
Well, you know, here's actually one of my earliest memories as a kid. I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I was in the living room at my house, where I grew up, and I was dancing. I used to love to dance. I used to spin. I used to twirl. And I was just having a wonderful time. And my father came into the room, and my father was a PhD candidate in biology. So, you know, just so you have that background, because I once told somebody this story. They said, oh, my God, I can't believe your father came in and said that. So what he said was he started talking about cells and about how the cells in our bodies are always dying. And this was fascinating to me. First of all, I didn't know my body was made up of cells. And second of all, I didn't know things in my body were always dying. And then, you know, he was telling me all about it. And he said, yeah, like one day you'll die. And I remember just stopping dead. Oh, my God. Now, I grew up on a horse farm that had chickens and dogs and horses, and I had a goat. But, you know, animals were always, like, disappearing because a fox would come out and get a chicken, or, you know, a horse would get old and would have to be put down. But somehow I never connected that that was going to happen to me, too, that, you know, one day I was going to lose my life. So I basically had a hissy fit. I mean, I remember, you know, he gave me that little piece of information, and he had no idea how it impacted me, and then he left the room. And I just sat there dumbfounded. And then there was something in me that went, but you're not dead yet. Keep dancing. I remember just picking up and, you know, twirling around again, just having this realization of, yeah, I'm not dead yet. Okay, I'm going to die. And that'll happen. But if I'm not dead, I might as well enjoy this dance. So that was my earliest memory. And that doesn't sound like sort of a metaphysical experience, but I do have to explain that throughout my life, I've had these experiences where somehow they sort of resonate inside me very deeply in a way that I remember them. I don't remember very much in my life. I have to confess, I've got a really terrible memory, but there are very specific memories that just inhabit me. I mean, they just, you know, they locked themselves down, and I can remember those. And getting to a certain point in my life, I was able to sort of go back and construct, you know, from those little, you know, those sort of, those little posts along the way, sort of a logic to it all, and something that sort of helped me to have the realizations I had that finally sort of broke through so I could make sense of everything that had gone on in my life, but also start to make sense of everything in the world, because that's really what was always driving me, was how does this world work? What's going on? You know, what happens with interactions with people? Why do people do the things they do? What does it all mean? What's behind it all? And I used to ask my parents these questions, and, you know, they're very philosophical questions. My parents didn't have the answers, but I knew there had to be answers out there. And that just, you know, sort of became a driving force in my life for a while. I started to have psychic experiences probably when I was a teenager. But more than the sake, I could predict certain things that were going to happen. I'd say, you know, I think such and such is going to happen today. Sure enough, you know, something would happen. Mm-hmm. I would go to a horse show, and I'd say, you know, I think I'm going to be champion today. And how would I come with a tricolor? It was great. Or I'd go in and say, I don't think I'm going to get anything today. And sure enough, that would happen too. But then life took over. I got busy with my education and with getting a job and, you know, doing that whole career path. But through it all, I was always very aware of something inside me guiding me. And whenever I followed that voice, good things happened. And whenever I didn't follow that voice, it wasn't so good. But, you know, it was foolproof that when I followed my heart, that things happened in a way that just worked out. So I had always had that, you know, sort of as a part of my experience and something that I was very aware of. But, God, how many stories do you want? I've got a few of them here. I don't want to run out of time.
We've got time.
Okay. All right. One thing that's really interesting to me, when I was in my early 20s and I was competing, I remember being at a three-day event. Actually, not an event. It was not a three-day event. It was an event. It was a shortened version. And being introduced to somebody. His name was John. And I remember as soon as I was introduced to him, my heart stopped, and I went, oh my God. I thought, this is really weird. I've never been introduced to somebody before and had my heart stop. And he was good looking, and we just, you know, we hit it off. We spent that day together. That evening, we spent a little bit of time together. I was staying at a hotel with the people that were helping me out with my horse. I couldn't sleep that night. My heart was just banging in my chest. And I thought, I have never reacted this way before about anybody. I have no idea what's going on. Next day, I couldn't wait to see him. I saw him. We spent more of the day together when I wasn't competing. And then at the end of the day, you know, I was doing all my flirtation stuff, trying to get him to, you know, ask for my phone number or something. And he did. He was very good. He said, I'll tell you what, let me give you my phone number and let's get in touch. I'd love to see you. He wrote down his name on a piece of paper, handed it to me. I looked at it. It was John, J-O-N. And my heart just went, oh, that's the wrong John. And I remember going, what the heck does that mean? That's the wrong John. I have no idea. What, this is so bizarre. I didn't find out until 2 years later when I met the man who's now my husband, whose name is John, J-O-H-N. So I kept having experiences like that happen where I go, why would that have made a difference? How could I have known that? And then the thing that really finally sort of, made me go, okay, it's time for me to find out what is going on here, is I was competing at the top level. At this point, I had quit my job as a software engineer, and I was competing very seriously, and I'd been long-listed for the Olympics, and I was at an event in Maryland, and I was I was at an event in Maryland. I remember walking my horse the morning of cross country. Cross country is the phase that's really dangerous in eventing. It's galloping at a high rate of speed for about 9 minutes over a course with jumps that the horse has never seen before. Mm-hmm. They don't come down. So if you end up in trouble, you're going to come down. The jump's not going to come down. And I remember walking my horse in the morning in hand, just, you know, getting her out, letting her stretch her legs. And I went by this stand of trees. And all of a sudden, I looked over into the trees, and there was this beautiful butterfly just lit up in this ray of light. And it was so unusual and so strange. And this voice suddenly came into my head, and it said, somebody dies today. Mm. And I went, oh, my God. And two things that were really strange. First of all, that there was this voice inside my head. Second of all, that it didn't surprise me. That was actually the thing that freaked me out more. I mean, you know, it's one thing we start hearing voices inside your head, but when you're sitting there going, okay, that's totally natural. The thing that really, I had a young daughter at home. I had a family I had to take care of that I was responsible for. So I was really worried. Is it me? Oh, my God. Does this mean that I'm going to fall and I'm going to die today? Because if that's the case, then I want to pull out of the competition. I don't want to do this. And so I was really obsessing about this. And for a couple hours, I was really, you know, I was on edge. I was wondering, should I go? Should I not go? I was trying to, you know, find that place where that sort of intuitive sense would tell me one way or the other, and nothing was coming. And so another time, I was walking by the trees again. Same old butterfly appeared, same ray of light, and the voice came again. And it said, it's not you. And that's when I went, oh, thank God. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do the course. And I did it, and it came out great. I had a clean round. I did really well in the competition. In the warm-up, as I was exiting the course, when I was done, was a friend of mine who I had known for many, many years. She started out 20 minutes after I had finished, and they have never made it past the second jump. She didn't technically die that day. They had her on life support for 10 days, but they did eventually take her off. And that just, you know, that was sort of like my wake-up call. That was like my, you know what, there's something going on here. You need to figure out what's behind all this, why this can happen, and what it all means. And that sort of started me on my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, just so people know, I've never heard voices again, not like that. I'm not crazy. I swear to God. Although maybe I am.
Well, there's a long conversation about what's crazy and what's not crazy. But when they've done brain studies of people that are clairaudient, who can hear things that other people don't hear, mm-hmm. the psychic sense of hearing, it lights up the same part of the brain as hearing a physical voice.
Yeah, it was exactly like someone was right there in my ear, and yet I was very aware that there were no sound waves outside my ear, but it was registering on my brain just as if someone had. So it was exactly that experience.
Right, right. So it's not like you're making it up. It's confirmable. It's an extended version of the sense of hearing, but since most people either have shut it down by the time they're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, mm-hmm. they don't remember it, mm-hmm. or they never really developed it. You know, they mm-hmm. never paid attention.
Yeah.
You know, more and more of the indigo and crystal children, the new different next generation children that are coming in, are clairvoyant and clairaudient, and they're never going to shut it down. You got a problem with it, it's your problem.
You know, it's interesting. I hear from a lot of people who do have abilities that, this is actually interesting. Someone from my high school that I was somewhat close to recently told me that she can see, you know, energies that have passed. And I had no idea. I mean, I knew her in high school. We were fairly close. We spent a lot of time together. And she found out, you know, the sorts of things I do and my abilities, and that's when she said, oh my gosh, I've had this all my life, but I thought I was such a freak. I didn't dare say anything to anybody. As it turns out, actually, she had said something to her mother, and her mother got really upset and really angry at her. Turns out her mother had had the same experiences herself as a teenager and was so freaked out by them that she had just shut herself down to them. So, you know, I hear from more and more people who have these sorts of experiences, and they're different. You know, there's so many different ways that we can experience the world, and different people, you know, seem to have a facility with some ways and not others. But I find that a lot of people don't talk about this because it's something that, you know, is sort of frowned upon.
Well, and there are various religious perspectives that make it seriously wrong.
Oh, so, right. There's that too. I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Depending on who it is that you're surrounded by, it could be at least socially, if not physically, dangerous.
Yep.
So there are lots of reasons and lots of things that get people to not talk about it, which is too bad, because then you find the other people that are having the experience and you sort it out.
Right, exactly.
You know, no teenager, since for a lot of kids it shows up when at puberty, and nobody wants to be different from anybody at puberty. You just want to fit in.
Right.
So it's even more of a struggle.
And that's funny you say that, because it did show up at puberty for me. And I remember reading something about it. I actually went to the library because it was so disturbing to me. I went to the library and got some books out, and that is exactly what I found out, which was really reassuring to me, because I thought, oh, thank God, this isn't just, mm-hmm. you know, some bizarre thing, and it's not my imagination.
Right, and it's why kids in early adolescence like to play around with spiritual stuff and do seances and all of that, and they get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people laugh at the Ouija board, but it actually works. It does open a portal, except you have no control over who comes through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a bunch of kids in an attic, you know, whether they're doing drugs or not, but they're playing around with that and getting freaked out and all the rest of it. And nobody really looks at a correlation with the one kid who killed himself, or another kid who winds up in a psych hospital, or the girl that gets pregnant within a few weeks, or any of the crazy things that happen that started because of a possession during a seance with a Ouija board.
Hmm.
So, you know, that it's an opening, and it's great when kids that are having that opening have somebody, at least other teenagers, but especially if there's an adult around who can say, yeah, that happens, and do this, don't do that. Oh, that's happening? Cool. This will probably happen too. You
mm-hmm.
know? normalizing it, making it, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's part of my life, too. You should know about this. This is how you do it safely. All the stuff that would happen with anything else in your life.
Yes, it's fun to, you know, I have two teenage kids, and my daughter has amazing cop radar. In fact, she freaks her friends out, because when she's driving, she'll go, oh, slow down, there's a cop in half a mile. And her friends will go, no, there's not. And then they'll go half a mile, and there's a cop on the side of the road. And by the way, a road that she hasn't been on that day. So it's not like, you know, she's seen the cop ahead of time. And she also has an ability to, you know, pick up stuff from animals. Actually, she's got a really good ability to do that sometimes. So it's fun to be able to, not necessarily encourage her in that, but just to normalize it and just, you know, sort of accept it as a fact, as opposed to, you know, what happened with me, which was that, you know, my mother questioned me. Obviously, that couldn't be real. It couldn't be an experience I was having. And so it's something I learned to keep to myself.
Right. Right. So, and you know, are admonishing adults who think this stuff isn't real, mm-hmm. or that it's crazy, to kind of say, okay, this is happening for you. Let's find somebody who can talk to you about it.
Yep.
But that means you have to accept that the person who's going to talk to him about it is neither crazy or, you know.
Right. Is a person of integrity who's going to be able to handle it themselves and right. you know, steer the kid in a very practical way.
Right. So before we run out of time, tell people the full range of stuff that you're involved in now, because you're doing counseling with people as well. Mm-hmm. And you're doing training people to ride and do things with horses?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I do straightforward lessons with nothing else. So if someone wants to improve their riding skills, you know, I can certainly do that. I have trained with some amazing people, some of the world's best people in my sport, in my life, and I feel so blessed to have the education that I have and to have had the exposure to the people I have had. So just in terms of straightforward riding with no spiritual stuff, I can do that, and I love doing that. And the same thing with training horses. So, you know, a lot of times lessons just don't go into, you know, any other territory except you got to come to the fence with a little more impulsion and make sure you keep your horse straight. Right. And that's great. I love that. But there are times when people obviously are looking for something else, and, you know, maybe they're floundering in their connection with their horse, and it's not a riding skill issue. It's more of a way that they're approaching it in their thinking. And, you know, really what I do, and this is where my education as a software engineer is so helpful, because it really is so logical. I mean, when you're dealing with things that go on in relationships, there's a way to take away sort of the layers of stuff that we've put on to relationships that really aren't there and see things in a very clear way. And so I really enjoy helping people with their horses and getting to that clarity in their relationships. And also in my work with people, I do that same thing. It's just helping them to see their life in a way that makes a lot more sense, that they mm-hmm. can then see the obvious thing right in front of them instead of sort of get lost in their own perception of what's going on. So it's kind of hard to pin down what I do. I mean, I can give riding lessons, but I also really love to guide people, and I've taught classes on the things that get in our way of living happy, fulfilling lives. Yeah, I'm hard to pigeonhole. I always have
been. You know, I'm trying to give you a marketing opportunity here.
All right, so. All right. Okay, then let me do that. Let me do the quick one.
Tell people why they should get in touch with you, besides the fact that you're a lot of fun and you know everything in the world about horses.
They should get in touch with me because I'm really, really good at helping people who maybe don't have that clarity in their life and they're looking for someone who can help walk them through some issues that they're going through, or maybe they are quote-unquote, you know, seekers, people who have been looking for answers and haven't been able to find them and are, you know, coming up against a brick wall. I remember when I was sort of going on my journey, I just wanted to know who knew the answers to the questions that I had. And, you know, I got there eventually, but man, if there had been somebody there who I could talk to, who knew the process, because it is a process. You know, I've led a couple people now to an awakening, and it's such a powerful thing to see them all of a sudden kind of get into that space where they go, oh my God, this is what everyone was talking about. And it's very rewarding for me to go through that process with somebody, and something that I definitely feel called to do.
Great. So, training horses, training people to ride horses, horse whispering, people whispering.
People whispering. Definitely people whispering. Yeah. Yes, all of the above. And am I a horse whisperer in terms of, yeah, I probably should say right now, I don't, if somebody wants animal communication, I usually refer them to somebody else, because although that ends up being a part of my horse training, it's one of those things where it's a tool, and if I get one of those, it occurs to me. I'll definitely use it, but it doesn't always happen, and I don't actively go into a horse training situation going, oh, I'm going to communicate with this horse and find out what's going on with him. So it's something that happens when it should happen to give me information, but it's not something I necessarily do.
Right. And if you need a good animal communicator who's also a medical intuitive, I have one for you.
That's right. You definitely do.
So, and you guys actually should get together. She's lurking in the background as we speak.
It sounds like it. You know, for that cup of coffee that I owe you from so many years ago that now we're up to a container ship of coffee beans.
Yeah, that's a whole other story that goes back. Goes back to that concussion. God, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Now there are people listening going, container ship of coffee has to do with a concussion?
Well, you were very kind to offer to help me out when I had that concussion with some of my issues. And I promised you a cup of coffee, and that was a long time ago. And we still haven't met for that cup of coffee. So with interest, it's now accrued to a whole container ship of coffee beans.
Which is great, because if I get that whole container, I can sell them and I'll be wealthy and life will, you know, all the things that are contingent on having more money would straighten out. So
That's true, except now I've got to get the money to buy that container of coffee. So now I'm screwed.
Yeah, there is that.
So any other questions?
And millions of questions. I'm sure we could go on forever.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I don't know if there's anything else to cover at this point. It's been fun to be on the show with you.
It's been great fun. Tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. JiffyReed.com, JiffyReed.com. There's an email address there. If they do want to get in touch with me, and there's also a page called Services that just sort of outlines what I do, and a project that I'm currently involved with, which is I'm creating a seminar that will combine a discussion on how we can have more harmonious relationships with our horses using all the principles of spiritual awakening, combining that with actually then having sessions with your horse. So, a weekend seminar to sort of explore this stuff in conjunction with our animal partners. And it should be a lot of fun. In fact, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I know it's going to be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And one of the things I can do for you is if you give me all that information, I'll put it on my blog.
Sounds great. I will do that.
So other people can hear about it.
All right.
So, Jiffy, thanks so much for being on. This has been great fun, as always.
All right. Thank you.
And since we just learned about cold brewing coffee, we're looking forward to that container ship of coffee.
Yes, we are.
So my guest tonight was Jiffy Reed, horse whisperer, people whisperer, and general incredible counselor. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. So next week, my guest is Alicia Goldstein, who is a PhD, and his focus is basically the power of now, the power of the present moment. And there are some other people that have done that kind of awareness meditation work, but he's doing it in a very specific kind of counseling relationship. And I'm fascinated with what he has to say. I haven't seen a whole lot about his work, but I got really curious. So Alicia will be our guest next week. If you're curious about my work, you can find what I do at househealing.com, househealing.com. And cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable way to get in touch with me by every conceivable technology, including a link that lets you go directly to a scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute complimentary kind of introductory session with people for about 20 minutes where I can take a look at what's going on for you and talk about how my work could be useful in your situation. So I just want to go back around to the metaphysical musing, as I often do, and have you think about what we really know about what reality is. You know, small questions, right? Scientists don't know what electricity is. We have a theory of what gravity is that Einstein came up with, but, you know, when you listen to some of this stuff, what the scientists are saying is way further out there than what the mystics said for thousands of years. So just remember that there's so much more for us to learn about how the power of our mind affects physical reality and what's going on around us, which, you know, is either it's really strange or really exciting, depending on your point of view. So until next week, excuse me. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere, here on Empower Radio. Have a great week. Be with us again next week. Bye-bye.